evening and welcome to the Easy Button podcast about gaming, gaming in your life and gaming, I don't know, just about gaming in general. What do you think?
Gaming?
what's this show about?
Games are pretty awesome. Let's just go with that.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. That's our tagline from now on. So tonight your joint hosts are James Prendergast and...
Taylor Boone. Hey, how's it going, Jim?
Awesome. I am awesome. I am pretty awesome. I've got a beer in my hand, actually. I'm feeling perked up.
Beer's good.
How about yourself?
I got a beer in my hand, too. Let's do a virtual toast or a virtual clink. There we go. Very nice. That's awesome.
The sound effects got already ready.
That's right. You got the Foley effect, Foley man right there.
I know. It's mad. I know. I'm actually prepared. What's going on? There was not really much in like news or anything. I haven't really been around this week. I've been doing other things. Other than the fact that you know, we talked about Ubisoft DRM last time,
right?
There's already a crack out for the first game.
Awesome.
And it's like for Silent Hunter 5, and it's a bit weird because it's cracked, but apparently the game connects to Ubisoft's server to download like kind of activation and authentication things to be able to get new levels. So although you have all the levels on the disc, they don't work out of the box. So I think like it does work, but it's kind of flaky. Mm. But I'm sure the full crack won't be far off. But it's just it's a bit sad that, you know, looking back, because I had a bit of a think about it. I thought, you know, I remember a time when Star Force couldn't be cracked. And that was out on quite a few games.
Right.
And so I don't know whether this has been like a big concerted effort to crack this DRM specifically because Ubisoft had announced it.
Well, I think one thing that you see, and you see this in mainstream security in general, is when you escalate, when one side escalates, the other side escalates as well. So,
yeah.
So the more DRM is out there, the more tools and more knowledge is out there for breaking that stuff. So it gets to the point where, you know, you have normal, quote unquote, normal DRM sorts of things. A lot of guys already have the tools before the game is even had the DRM implemented in it. They have a lot of tools ready to go to break it. So I think this, you know, that's one of the reasons why you see Ubisoft going with this, you know, kind of hardcore, always be online sort of thing to try to combat that. And sounds like it's not successful. Big surprise there.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I couldn't predict that. I don't think anyone else did either. I think it's completely unexpected results.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess one of the big news items from this week is the two top guys from Infinity Ward got fired from Activision.
Yeah.
For insubordination and breach of contract.
Yeah, it's pretty sketchy, isn't it? Like all the kind of reports.
Yeah, there's not a, you know, it's one of those things where you'll never, you know, if it really is an internal thing, corporations are legally bound to not share or not divulge any of that sort of information. But it's kind of odd. I mean, it does kind of make you scratch your head a little bit. What, you know, what would cause the guys responsible for probably the biggest video game ever in the history of ever?
Well, did you read the legal documents that were sent out by the kind of countersuits from the Infinity Ward head honcho?
No, I did not.
Basically, one of the assertions was that Activision signed some kind of document which said to the effect of that Infinity Ward had a veto on any Call of Duty game set after the Vietnam War. And they could have, if they could either say it couldn't be produced or that they wanted to do it themselves, and they would have artistic license to take the franchise or their own IP in whatever direction they wanted.
Huh.
After Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems kind of bizarre that things would have to be awful, awful, awful.
Well,
$500 million awful to end that relationship, it seems like.
Well, apparently, like, they didn't want to do Modern Warfare 2. Like, one of the things was, I've read quite a few things on, like, Kotaku and other places, other blog, like, these other game blogs, that the rumour mill had it that Infinity Ward and Activision have not got along for the last, you know, 4 or so years or maybe longer.
Right.
And they didn't see ICY. Apparently, there was only like one guy they'd actually speak to within Activision or something like that.
Right.
To actually communicate with the head, with the bosses and, you know, management, which it's possible. I mean, it's only rumour, so I don't know what's going on. But if that was the case, then it's possible that Infinity Ward actually wanted to maybe leave, and that's been one of the big kind of not rumors, like kind of big what's the word I'm looking for? big ideas,
yeah, like, right, yeah.
But what? Well, that was the actual insubordination that was being referenced.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, having worked in corporate America for a long time, I mean, there's insubordination, but if you're successful, then a lot of things can be overlooked. And, you know, these guys are,
yeah.
It's not like these guys weren't making their numbers, right? I mean,
no.
They were blowing it out of the water. And so, yeah. I don't know, just as a puzzler that things would get so bad. I mean, I can understand the creative guys wanting to go do their own thing.
Yeah.
But
like, sorry, I was going to say, but if it's a choice of we lose these two guys or we lose most of the studio when they walk out and form their own studio.
Well, don't you think that's going to happen anyway?
Well, probably now, but maybe Activision felt that, you know, they didn't have much of a choice. I mean, I'm not defending anyone's actions.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm not either. I'm not, yeah. Like I say, it truly is a head-scratcher for me because, I mean, it's just one of those things where if you're that successful, you know, it's kind of like the Beatles breaking up, right? I mean, you're the best band ever in the world and you can't get along good enough to make a freaking record? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, You got the biggest franchise in the world. I don't really care that much for it personally, but a lot of people do. You know, made a shit ton of money, and you can't figure out, the two of you can't figure out how to get along in order to make, you know, the next thing, whatever the next thing was, you know, was slated to be. I don't know. Just, yeah. Like I say, head scratcher. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's pretty big deal.
It is. I mean, it could be the end of that side of the franchise. I mean, I think Treyarch will. I mean, people always say that Treyarch's games aren't very good, but the ones I've seen, they seem okay. They didn't seem any worse, really, than the main Call of Duty games, apart from Call of Duty, was it 3? That was pretty bad.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think that's where a lot of things get judged by was Call of Duty 3, right? Because it wasn't as good as 2, and it sure wasn't as good as 4.
No.
You know,
I mean, World at War sold a metric shit ton, didn't
it?
Yeah, I mean, and had all of the zombie download packs and stuff, didn't
they?
They sold a lot.
And I think, you know, they're certainly better than competent developers, and they have a pretty good track record of that. And, you know, everybody's going to put out a stinker here and there every once in a while, and you just, you know, going about your business. But yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to do it. And then I guess, you know, Activision has another studio in the wings to do more Call of Duty stuff.
Yeah, that's
Sledgehammer true. Games,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and I think that was in their 10K filing or whatever. You know,
I don't know what it's
financial,
called. Yeah,
financial filing with the SEC that they had another studio to do Modern Warfare stuff, and I think we're about to open wide and get Modern Warfare crammed down our throats like we got Guitar Hero crammed down our throats here in the next couple of years.
Well, I think one of the big things looking at, Bobby Kotick, has his big thing in the recent statements he's given has been about monetizing Modern Warfare, and that's either going to be like microtransactions or it's going to be like a kind of MMO type game.
Yeah, and I don't think it's either. I think it's both.
Possibly, yeah.
Of course, I'm cynical, but I don't think there's any either there. I think it's both, and then they'll come up with a third way to monetize that as well.
Adverts.
On the
guns.
You know,
on the guns.
Yeah, would it surprise you?
No.
Not at this point.
It'd be funny, though. Imagine that, like, you pull your gun up to shoot some I don't know, terrorist down or some Russian or something, and he comes up with an advert for Coke.
There you go. Or, yeah, this clip brought to you by Ford. Right? There you go. There's your in-place ad. You know, you're about to unload a clip and you get a pop-up.
Can you imagine that? Well, not even that, but you go to the resupply crate or whatever, and you have a choice of normal clips, which have 24 bullets in, but the Ford clip has 48. But, you know.
Oh, man. Yeah, I could totally see that.
I think I should send my resume off to Activision.
There you go. They're looking for guys just like you.
You evil bastards.
Oh, God. So that's that was the big news. There's another big story, at least, that I was passingly interested in the first half of the week, and I kind of hesitate to bring it up because I don't know how the story ends, really. I mean, I think I know how the story ends, but I'm missing about five steps in the middle. But was the portal...
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah, they released two updates to Portal. The first one put in some audio files, which were then decoded into images, which were then decoded into some kind of hash number, which was a bulletin board ringing number. And they also had some like Morse code things.
Right, yes.
And then from the bulletin board, they downloaded some pictures. And then there's a second update, which added in a new ending.
Yes.
I think to the portal one.
Yeah,
and the big thing from, was it Game Informer that's leaked? Do you want to go through that? It's your story. So,
well, no, I mean it's not really my story; it's the world story. But Game Informer, you know, evidently it's going to have the next month of Game Informer is going to announce Portal 2, which is pretty cool. And it looks like that all of this was some sort of viral marketing internal valve pointing toward Portal 2, and.
What's your take on it? Like, on the actual marketing side, the viral marketing thing. Do you enjoy that kind of thing? Or
I it was interesting to follow for a while. I mean, I think one thing that it shows is there's a lot of people with a lot of free time on their hands. It probably could be better better used solving world hunger or something useful instead of trying to decrypt all this stuff. But seriously, yeah, I think it's pretty cool when it's done well and cleverly like this was done. I mean, this was. You know, you had to go in, and there are a lot of people spending a lot of brain power trying to figure out what all this means and what's the next piece, and you know, and so it was fun, it was interesting, and you know, Valve being able to totally, you know, they had the complete ecosystem for this to occur from the delivery mechanism, the game, and you know, it's a 2 year old over two and a half year old game, download, you know. The update automatically, and you know, a few people noticed it, and then they just had this whole wrapper around this announcement, which is just amazing to watch and listen. And you know, they're so fun. I mean, I'm so glad that Valve is around. I mean, I don't, you know, at the expense of sounding like a Valve fanboy, you know, they just kind of get it, and they are not above poking fun at their customers a little bit, but.
Yeah,
you know, we all laugh together, right? They're not
most of the time,
and they're not. They're a company, and they're in it to make business. You know, make money. They're in a business to make money, and so it's not all fun and games, and it's not altruistic by any means. But it's they do have a way to get you engaged and hooked back in.
I think the thing I would say about Valve, they know the customer really well,
yes,
and they're very close to the customer, so they can always give you what they think that you want.
Yeah, and most of the time, they're right.
Yeah.
Which is why they're successful. I mean, I can't... Can you think of a Valve game that was... I mean, I guess...
I think the only one which was ill-received was Left 4 Dead 2, but, yeah.
Well, by some
that's
people...
That's one out... Well, that's what I mean. It's not out of... Not right. by everyone. Yeah.
And I think
I can't think of that. It didn't happen to any other games as far as I can think of.
And I think most people have gotten past the Left 4 Dead 2 part and have moved not on me. And have been enjoying themselves... For a long time, so that's a great segment into what we've been playing.
Yeah, cool.
Since I've been playing Left 4 Dead 2, like, it's going out of style.
Have you?
Yeah.
Do you know how many hours you played offhand, or?
Total?
Well, just the, like, this, yeah, this past, total, yeah.
Past two weeks, it's 15 hours.
15 hours?
Which is a lot of time for me.
It's not bad, yeah.
That's a lot of time for me. So yeah, right around 15 hours. I'm over 100 hours in mark, which that's a lot of hours too. 100 hours on a game. Wow,
That's like an RPG.
Yeah, exactly. So it's still awesome. I mean, I wish you would. I guess I'm not asking you to.
If it goes on sale, I'll pick it up.
It'd be fun to play with you sometime, man.
Apparently, I think someone else on the forum or on the. The IRC chat was saying it went down to like $7 or something, but I don't think that happened over here.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I would have picked it up for that price.
Right, it's fun. It's incredible. TF2, fun, incredible. Again, another Valve game. They just keep rocking it. It's just amazing, and I'll probably be playing that until I die.
So, like, back to Left 4 Dead. Briefly. Sure. Like, who do you play? What do you like about the game the most? Is it the gameplay, the characters, the setting?
I think that obviously who you play with is very important because it is a cooperative game.
Yeah.
And luckily, we have an ecosystem of mostly nice people to play with, and so I would not be playing Left 4 Dead 2 or TF2 to the extent that I do now without this nice system of echo. So some of our listeners are in that ecosystem. Hi, listeners. We love you. I love playing games.
Gamers with jobs.
Yeah. But I think what Valve does such a good job is they give you all the tools, right? So there's an interesting setting, interesting weapons. The weapons feel quote-unquote right, whatever that means. Yeah.
They're powerful enough, they provide enough kick, but they don't seem like they're, you know, like shooting peas, or you don't seem like they're killing everything within sight.
Right. They feel good, right? I've never shot an AK-47, but I can imagine that it would feel somewhat like this, you know. And so all these things go together with good people to enable you to have a good time. You know, the voice chat stuff is brilliant, right? I mean,
yeah, in the game, it's a nice feature.
Yeah, it really helps make the game in a lot of ways. The game would be fun, but not as fun, right? And so it's all these little bitty detail, and it's all the details that kind of add up to more than the sum of the parts.
So, I mean, one thing I liked about the original was even though they have voice chat there, they also have a really quick and simple emote system, basically.
Right.
Well, you hold down at X, and then you can do a direction on your mouse, and it'll tell, say, you know, look out or laugh or whatever. Yeah,
cool. And that's pretty cool. And then I think the third level of that, right, is that they've automated the characters saying common things, right?
Like
reloading or pills here or, yeah, right. And so that's something you don't even have to think about. It just kind of happens. So you don't really have to get taken out of the game to do something mundane like that, which is it's just a brilliant touch.
And I think it's quite interesting as well, because I think you that what you're saying about they automate some of the sayings.
Yeah.
I think based on observation, this is just anecdotal, I think that they change depending on what's happening in the game. So if you're in the middle of a firefight, it'll actively say, I'm reloading. But if you're just in a bit of dead time between, you know, fights, don't think it mentions it as often. There's a less of a percentage chance of hearing that.
Right. I think you're right. I was about to say, no, you're wrong. And they say it every time, but no, that's not true. I actually remember playing last night and reloading and not saying reloading. So, that's like I say, they're just all the little touches. And the fact that it's a, you know, to all intents and purposes, it's a downloadable content game that they continue to iterate on, and so they can make it better and more awesome over time. It's just, I don't know. I mean, they're at the height of their power.
I wish I'd done the first one.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll be quiet now.
Well, I mean, hey, you know, they're releasing some new DLC for the first one.
Yeah, I hope it's decent, because like Crash Course is pretty pathetic.
I don't know. It's fun. I enjoy Crash Course. It's great because it's a good way to get co-op in an hour instead of two, which is what a normal game of co-op takes.
But you could just start from halfway through.
You could, but then you miss the entirety of the experience. I mean, because there is, you know, well, Crash Course is a little gimped, right? Because it is short, and there are places that don't work as well as others. But
I don't know. I mean, I don't play Versus, if that's what you're talking about with that.
Yeah.
But
it's. Oh yeah, Crash Course is definitely a versus map. It's not a co-op. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, but not really. It's really there for versus. It's really there to allow you to experience versus in an hour instead of two.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Because 2 hours of versus is it's a long time.
It's a big commitment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially, and if people drop out, then of course the game can quite easily become unbalanced, can't it?
Well, and most people will try to drop out when, you know, when the survivors are in the safe room, and then everybody waits around for somebody to pick up. But, yeah, it's kind of a pain in the ass, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So I try not to get – personally try not to get on knowing that I'm going to have to bail within 2 or 3 hours, depending on, you know, circumstances. Because, yeah, it's kind of crappy to get on and then have to bail. So, you know, stuff happens, and I've had to drop before, but, you know, feel crappy when you do it.
Yeah, I'm sure no one hates you.
I'm sure everybody hates me, but that's okay. That's okay.
Oh.
So, yeah, I didn't want to bring those up because, you know, I'll probably pop those up every time we talk because, like, I play those all the time.
Yeah.
So, and I've been playing a lot of Europa Universalis 3.
Oh, yeah.
This game's cool. Got its hooks into me really hard. I'm in the 1680s. As of today, actually about half an hour before we podcast, I finished up my latest session with it.
And, man, you're bad.
it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can understand. I got that sometimes.
A lot of fun. So some new stuff. So sad. So here's a sad thing. So recently, Interstate 76, one of my old. It's an old game. Released in
Little Games.
Yeah, from Good Old Games. Obligatory plug here. I downloaded it, bought it, downloaded it, and played it. And, man, it's just sad. It's
Have you wiped away the film of nostalgia?
Yeah, really. You know, I'm having some technical difficulties, so I'm having to play with their software renderer. And okay. It's ugly. And clunky, and it's just that when you sometimes you run, you know, I play a lot of old games, and most of the time they hold up well or hold up good enough, and I can power through some of the shortcomings, but man, I just can't do it unless I can figure out how to get because I don't know if you remember, there's a technology, there's a company called 3DFX, first 3D cards back in the day. And they had a proprietary 3D API called Glide.
Oh, right? Yes.
You remember that? And
I thought, do NVIDIA not support that anymore? Because they absorbed.
No, it hasn't been supported in a decade.
Oh, okay.
So, because everybody does Direct3D, right? Or OpenGL,
yeah.
Right? So, nobody really, that stuff, Glide died a long time ago. And so, but this game has a Glide mode. And trying to get this to get it to work with, there's some guys who reverse engineered Glide, and they have these things called Glide wrappers. And GOG actually uses one, but it doesn't work on my computer for some reason. And so I've been playing with that a little bit, and I have been unsuccessful as of yet to get that to work. Yeah, and there's a Direct3D mode, but that doesn't appear to work on Vista either. So... I'm playing with the software renderer. I played through the first mission, and I think that's...
Is it, like, kind of a bit of a side here? Do you remember the first Driver?
No.
Oh, okay, maybe you didn't play.
I didn't play Driver.
Like, is it... I'm trying to think of a kind of comparable game. Have you played... I know you wouldn't have played that now. Oh, never mind. Go on, sorry. What's it like?
So the game is... It's a very strange game. Okay, it's the wrapper around it is a spoof of 70s action TV shows. So yeah. You have the white male dude with his shirt unbuttoned and long shaggy hair with big mustache,
yeah,
driving a muscle car. You have the black guy with the afro with the big ring that does karate. you have the country bumpkin with the grease-stained overalls and the baseball cap, who's your mechanic. And you have muscle cars, right, from the 70s. And these are all slightly, you know, the serial numbers have been filed off of normal cars, you know, in order for lawsuits not to happen. But it's pretty clear if you remember 70s muscle cars what car goes with what. And so that's the wrapper around it. And then inside of it is basically it's an auto combat game. So you take these muscle cars and you strap rocket launchers and machine guns onto them, and you go and you blow other dudes up.
Okay.
And so the story set inside of this TV show is, you know, your sister was what they call an auto vigilante, right? So the setting is United States in the 70s. Oil is really, really expensive, more expensive even than it is now. And so gas is very, dear.
Yeah.
And, you know, this causes society to start to break down. So, you know, people started arming their cars and going around and robbing people. And then so these auto vigilantes spring up to, you know, be the fighters for truth, justice in the old American way.
Oh, wow.
And so the protagonist's sister was one of these auto vigilantes, unbeknownst to him. And she finds some really bad stuff going down, and so she gets killed. And her partner, the black guy, Taurus, of course, who quotes poetry, which is pretty awesome in the game. You can always ask Taurus to quote you some poetry while you're driving around. And you know, he goes and finds your character, whose name is Groove Champion. What an awesome name, Groove Champion. How cool is that?
Where was Perrin's hippies?
I guess, well, yeah, it's the 70s, right? So, anyway, so then the whole idea is to avenge your sister's death, and you go through these series of missions to, you know, figure out what's going on, and, you know, back when I played it, it was awesome, right? It was one of those games that I kind of forgot about, but when it came out on good old games, I was like, yeah, that's awesome. That's a badass game ever, right? Because it's got these awesome cards with these awesome weapons, and you're just shooting dudes up, and it's just very visceral and very, you know, all the cool stuff of a pretty good, pretty competent driving game with weapons and a kind of interesting story. And on top of that, it's got this really great, funky soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. And so it's just a total throwback to these cheesy 70s shows that I grew up on, right? So it hits that nostalgia button, right? Square dead. And, yeah, and it's just, it was a great game. And it's just really sad. It has aged really, really badly. And nobody is going to be able to pick up the pieces of that, I don't think.
No. Not unless they, like, remake it or something.
Yeah, and they'll never remake it, right?
No, I mean, even if they did, it wouldn't be the same.
Right, exactly. So that's Interstate 76. That's sad. Now, Neutral, right? So, Trine. I picked up Trine over Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And I had never played it. And finally decided last weekend to give it a try.
Is this on Steam or...?
Yeah, it's off of Steam.
Okay.
I don't know. Don't know what to think about it.
Were you, before you're into this, were you a fan of Lost Vikings?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't even know what that is. So, why are they lost?
It's the same kind of thing. You have three individuals you control separately. But I think with Trine, it's the same person, but you switch between each one, don't you?
Right, like, yeah.
In the same body.
Yeah, they're
but
different
in Lost Vikings. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, but in Lost Vikings, there were three separate people who you could move around and then you press space to switch between them or something. I can't remember which one it was.
Okay. Yeah, it's similar, except there's just one body. And the look and the environment is excellent. It's beautiful. The controls are great. And the puzzles are pretty cool. The way they put the three people together into one person and your ability to switch on the fly is pretty cool. I suck at platformers. And that really is keeping me from enjoying this as much as I probably should. You know, you see something that you know you should be able to get to, and I just can't get to it. So I get frustrated, and then I either move on and just say, screw it, or I say, screw it, and turn it off and go do something else. Because it's I don't know. But
you hit your frustration.
Yeah, and my frustration for platformers is pretty low. And, you know, And I'm playing it on easy, so I'm a baby, but I don't know. So I should like it more. I feel like it's one of those games I feel like I should like more than I do. And I've never gotten to a rhythm where I'm able to, you know, be the you know, the fighter guy, and then switch on the fly into the magic dude, and then switch on the fly into the thief chick to do all
this
stuff.
Is there any combat?
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of combat. All
right.
Yeah, so you have a fighter who can do has a sword and has a shield, and so the shield when you control the shield, you can, you know, have it arc up or behind or in front, of course. And so he can kill dudes. And then you have a thief chick, right? Whose big thing has a grappling hook, which is kind of cool. Right. And then she shoots bow and arrows, and she's more agile. So she jumps a little higher and stuff. Then you have a mage, who right now all I can have him do is, draw. So you draw a box and it makes a magical box appear in the world, and then you can interact with it in the world, and there's a lot of physics and stuff like that. So it's one of those, like I said, it's one of those games I feel like I should like more than I like, but I think it's more the kind of game it is I'm not into as much as I should, or if I was going to play this.
Is it? Do you think if it was more puzzler, it would be, you'd like it more?
Yeah. I mean, some of the things I enjoy about it are the little puzzles that they give you. And then, so you'll like solve a puzzle and that'll be pretty cool. And then there'll be some platforming, and then I suck and fall and die and get pissed. So, yeah. So, like I say, I'm going to keep probably playing it, you know, and struggling through a little bit, because it is, you know, the atmosphere is great, and I'll forgive a lot of sins for a good atmosphere and a good, you know, good environment and an interesting physics toys to play with. But, you know, if I fall on one of these spike traps again, I don't know. And then
you're gonna pick up your mouse and throw it across the room.
Yeah, maybe. Gotta hope not. But yeah. And so this week I picked up a game that is just blows my mind that I actually spent money on this.
Well, in a good way or a bad way?
Yeah, both. So, so you know, I'm a PC gamer, right? Mostly, and I play a couple consoles. And I think we mentioned on one of the, you know, past podcasts, I have a DS myself, my own personal DS. The kids usually play. So I was in Best Buy picking up some tax software because it's the tax season over here, and I went over to the DS section for some reason that I do not know why, and I picked up Shiren the Wanderer.
Oh, yeah, I've heard things about this.
Yeah.
Is it like an RPG thing?
Yeah, it's like a roguelike, which is what interested me and why I guess I'd heard somebody talk about it somewhere, and it kind of stuck in my tiny little mind, so that when I actually saw it on the shelf, I'm like, yeah, I know what that is. That's a roguelike. And I started reading about it, and I'm like, you know what? It's $15.
That's not too bad.
So, but it does blow my mind, because I've now, you know, increased my... my DS collection by 50%, and I've been playing it a bit, and it's fun so far. It is the cutesy Japanese anime crap, but that I don't really care about so much. But once you get into the game itself, it is definitely a roguelike. All you're missing is the ampersand and or the at sign and hash marks and, you know, letters for for monsters and crap and stuff like that. You know, it's very, you know, it's cutie. But once you get in, you pick up scrolls and you pick up potions and there's traps and monsters to kill and stuff. Yeah, it's fun.
So when you die, what happens?
When you die? I haven't died yet. So I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what happens. I did try to quit in the middle of a level, and it says, if you quit now... you will start at the beginning of the level and you'll lose all your money and your stuff. So I didn't quit.
Yeah.
So I just played through the end of the level and then I quit. So it saves at the end of the level. So I remember somebody saying, I think you die. I think you go back to the beginning of the level and you play. And then I want to say that that your stuff is still there, that you can come across it. But don't quote me on that. I'm not sure because I haven't had it happen yet. I'm only on the third. I think I just finished the second level. You're going to the town that takes you to the dungeon. So I haven't put a whole ton of time in, but maybe an hour and a half. I haven't had a lot of time to play the DS. Not my gaming platform of choice. But it is interesting. You know, like I say, it blows my mind that I would go and pick that up. It just was like, just weird.
It sounds like quite a nice alternative for change.
Yeah. I might actually pick it, take it, when I go out to, the kids swim practice or gym practice.
Downtime to kind of...
Yeah, my iPhone is starting to get old and the battery doesn't last but about half a practice nowadays before it dies if I'm playing an intense game, so...
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's...
I bet you wish that was replaceable now.
It is replaceable when I get a new one.
When you rip it apart.
Replace the whole unit. It'll be awesome.
I mean, the good thing about the DS as well is when you close it over, the game's still running, but it's like in suspended mode, which is really... And it saves a lot of battery life.
Yeah.
I've done that before, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like I say, the kids have had them for a long time, so... I know about them, even though I don't really play mine very much.
Mm.
So anyway, so those are what I've been playing. I didn't mean to go on as long as I did, but
that's right, don't worry.
But I guess I've played too many games.
Yeah, I think you play more than me.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool. Shall I? Have you finished?
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done. The floor is yours, my friend.
The floor is mine. Woo, woo! The power's good to
power is yours.
So I think the first game I played really was Resident Evil 5, and it's my first. Have you ever played any of the games
in that
series? Well, it was my first one. I never played like any of the ones on the PlayStation or the PS2 or anything, and I really enjoyed it actually. Even though it has quite a few foibles, but like I suppose you could call them character flaws. Basically, it's a survival horror.
Okay.
And you're in this game. There's you and an AI counterpart who goes through, and the game ends up being like kind of a co-op. All
okay.
And you can play it co-op with another person, but they have to be with you.
Okay.
Or through Xbox Live. I played it on the Xbox 360. You're fighting basically these like zombie outbreaks as they're going through, and it tells a story. That unfolds as time goes on through the game. And it's quite interesting. It was one of the... If you're not used to it, it takes a little bit of time getting used to the mechanics of the game. So when you pull your weapon out, whatever it is, whether it's a gun or a knife or whatever, you cannot move.
Oh, really?
No. You can aim, but you can't like turn, you can't run and stuff. You can't backpedal. You're static.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. But the good thing is, like, when you finally work out like how it all works together, like the enemies are basically behaving by the same rules that you are also, sticking to. So like when they attack, you can see that they're stopping and then turning and then jumping at you or whatever, or they reach you, and then there's an animation where they like kind of reach back and then like hit you and stuff. So a lot of the time you can just stop aiming and then run around, because you can run around quite quick, and you can just dodge.
So the mechanic of pulling your weapon and putting your weapon away is fast enough that it's not like
you have your weapon out all the time.
Okay, so when you go hit a button to start aiming, I understand now. Okay.
Yeah, you just basically your weapon goes from down by your side to being, at arm's length or whatever. Or, like on your shoulder if you've got, like, a rifle or something. And in this game, I'm not sure what in previous games, but in this game, the D-pad on the Xbox has, like, hot buttons for different weapons.
Okay.
Or items, and you can select, because you have, like, an inventory.
Okay.
So you can put, like, these things, at, up, down, left, and right, and then you can access them via the D-pad, as it's called. So that's pretty cool. The one thing I didn't like about it was the knife button. So using the knife, because like you have a kind of a last resort close combat attack to kind of stun an enemy while you want to run away or something.
Okay.
And to use that, you have to press one button and then press another. And when you press the first button, it brings the knife out in an animation to make it ready. and only then can you attack. So like it would have been, I think it would have been better if you could have just pressed that button and you would have slashed with the knife. But I think that's really my only.
Right. So this is what I was, talking about before, I guess, where there is a time between you wanting to attack and your ability to attack, because they have to complete that animation of you drawing your knife.
Yes. I mean, the other weapons, the time is much smaller. Right. So it's not too bad. Okay. But yeah, and you do tend to get like lots of health things you can pick up. And what's nice feature as well is you have not only your inventory, which is quite limited, there's only 9 spaces, but you have your partner's inventory as well. Okay. So as long as you're close to them, you can hand them things, and they can then use them or whatever. So I tended to offload all my health things to my friend Cole, what's her name? Can't remember now. It's basically it's a woman.
Okay.
And she will heal you and herself.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
So while you're, she doesn't use all the best weapons, unfortunately, or she's not that great about killing things. So I tended to do all the killing, or the majority of the killing, and let her heal me. You know what I mean? Kind of, it takes a bit of the micromanagement out of the game.
Huh.
So that's quite cool.
Okay. Sounds like you had a good time. But I mean, so aside from not being very good at shooting, was she competent? I mean, was the AI?
Oh, she's fine. She hits things. She's really slow. Like, you know, you pull the trigger in any kind of game, or even like on the mouse, you can click. You go click, and you'll fire off 3 shots. Like the AI tends to go fire.
Okay.
Fire. All right. You know, it's like unnecessary long.
Okay. I see what you're saying. So, I mean, because that's one thing that kind of ruins can ruin one of those sorts of games where they want it to feel like a co-op, even if you're not playing it as a co-op. If your AI buddy is just totally stupid, yes, that will make the game a lot less fun.
And that luckily wasn't really an issue in this game. Okay. There was a couple of times when I got a bit frustrated, but mostly like she'd run off somewhere like once or twice, rather than like kind of you can tell her to come to you.
Right.
That's
good. That's a nice feature. That's a good thing to have.
And there's like you can change her state from being aggressive to being kind of defensive.
Right.
But I didn't really notice much difference between the two, to be honest with you. So I left it on defensive all the time after I tried it out a little bit.
She's slow. She doesn't want to.
Possibly.
<I don't know.
laughs> But no, the game is actually quite good. And yeah, I mean, the graphics are always good, aren't they? On the 360 these days, you don't really get any. It's not. It's mid life cycle now, so you don't really get any bad looking games.
Pretty much, that's true.
It's actually made me want to go back and play through the original games. And I know they were re-released and remade on the GameCube, and I have a GameCube, so I might actually see if we can find them on eBay or something. But I know from friends who are really into Resident Evil that they're not as good as the originals, at least. But then I suppose they have nostalgia attached to those games. I don't know whether I don't know how that really stacks up.
Right. Well, I mean, I always like to go back and see, especially if you enjoyed a game, where it came from. Right. That's always a good and fun thing to go see. Even if you don't, if you can pick the games up for you know a decently cheap price, you know it's worth it. Even if you don't finish it, to just go and play, you know, 4 hours of the very first game, and you can kind of get a lot of the backstory and why things are the way they are. And that stuff is always interesting to me in the game world. Especially coming into something, you know, rather late in the cycle of a franchise, right?
Definitely,
I mean, they tried.
I mean, I want to go back and get RE4, Resident Evil 4. Because that was like a really big game when it first came out.
Yeah, actually, I have heard of that one. Again, it's not my it doesn't play to my strong point. So I mean, I've heard some really good things about that game.
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, I'm not really a big survival horror genre fan, because of these things like you can't move when you fire and stuff like that. The things that are introduced, elements which are introduced into the game to make them more tense, like artificially tense.
Right.
But when I played Dead Space a while back, I really got into. I really enjoyed that. So kind of. I've given them a second chance, as it were.
Cool.
So I think my next game, my last game, was Brutal Legend.
Brutal Legend.
Brutal Legend, yes. I don't know what that was.
I didn't know you were a heavy metal freak.
I'm not really, but I mean, I do things. Though I do like music. You know what I mean? But I like what I
do.
I know
you like your music. That's true.
Yeah, and I do have a darker, heavy side to me sometimes. But I like that kind of style as well. I mean, I love things like. It's not really heavy metal, but Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, like that. I like what's the one with Do You Accept Cash? Shwing.
Yeah, that's Wayne's World.
Wayne's yes. World, yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah. So I do like, you know, I like that
that's
kind of
heavy
stuff.
Metal,
and that's kind of really where Wayne's World 2 is probably Brutal Legend level of awesome.
Okay, all right.
So it's not quite as it's. For people who don't know what the game's about, it's basically this roadie for a band. I think, I'm not sure he's killed, but in the opening sequence, I think he's killed by a falling piece of stage scenery. And he goes to this magical world where there's all this topsy-turvy stuff going on, like demons and stuff like that. And it's all based around kind of rock and metal kind of imagery.
Right. This game interested me a lot. I have not picked it up and have not played it. I played the demo.
Yeah,
because one reason I haven't played it is because of the game that it becomes, not the game that the demo is. But yes. I read a lot about it because it was very interesting to me. Because you know, as a child of the late 70s and early 80s, heavy metal of the type depicted by this game is very interesting to me. And seeing how someone who is as brilliant as Tim Schafer is at game design. How he would handle heavy metal, and obviously it's something that is very near and dear to his heart, how he would handle this game. And so one of the things that I read about it, and you played it, so I can't believe, I don't know why the hell I'm talking as much as I am about it, but I am rather excited for the game, is one of the things he said is he wanted the view of the world at any point to look like an 80s heavy metal record album cover.
Yeah, I think it's achieved.
Right.
I mean, you get like monolithic stone sculptures of a guitar and someone's hand, like, you know, throwing up the horns and stuff like that. And like, you know, it's the art style of the world is fantastic, and the characters are pretty good, and the writing is all excellent. Really, you know, I've done 40% of the game, so I'm a fair way through. But I'm reached like. You know, halfway or anything, yes. But it's as an artistic kind of cohesive thing, the game is very well made. The game mechanics side is not so well done. Like exploring is fine, and the collectibles is fine. Combat isn't very well done. If anyone's listening, you played the Viking Battle for Asgard or Conan the Barbarian, the one on the 360, they had you know, more focused, and even Wolverine as well, they had more focused fighting systems, which had more, they're very simple to use, but had offered a kind of a level of variation and subtlety that this game does not have. So it's not that great to fight. And then they have basically kind of switches to pitched battles occasionally.
Right.
And they are horrible, really horrible. Really, I mean, you can play through them, but they are not. The ones I've played so far haven't been enjoyable,
right.
It's just not that great.
Right, and I think that's what has kept me from getting this. As excited as I was when it was being, you know, going through the hype cycle prior to release. When it came out and you heard people talking about just exactly what you pointed out, that deflated the balloon for me quite a bit.
Yeah, it was like, on the one hand, there's this awesome game. On the other hand, there's this game which isn't so hot. Apart from the RTS, I mean, I can handle the fighting. That's not too bad. But the kind of the way your character will band together with certain units is an interesting kind of mechanic. don't think it's particularly well executed. But the RTS, the kind of the battle elements are pretty poor. But the one thing I think you might enjoy actually is there's so many personalities from the actual metal bands in this game, and apart from, you know, a couple of them don't act so well, but you know, I think the nostalgia of seeing them there and the people who I wouldn't have thought are actually quite good in the game. You know, they deliver their lines with a lot of feeling and stuff. Like Ozzy Osbourne is awesome, and the guy normally I can't understand a single word he says. You know, but in this game, somehow he's managed to come off the booze or something, or maybe go back on the booze long enough to deliver his lines, and they're clear. Unless maybe they had an impersonator or something. I don't know. They're actually, and obviously, you know, Blackjack, he's a perfect person for this part.
As the main
protagonist. I'm not sure, but I don't know who the other people are. I don't know. I don't know if Lars is actually Lars. I don't know, someone from a band or something. But yeah, this seems to be
okay. They had the general guy was Rob Halford from Judas Priest, I believe.
What did he play? The general guy.
Yeah,
okay,
I don't remember. I don't remember his name. And then
Lars, he calls him.
Yeah, and then the bass guy is what's his name? He's from Motorhead. Lemmy.
Yeah.
From Motorhead. I really was hyped about this game, and I will probably pick it up at some point and noodle through it, just to listen to the tunes.
And the number of songs on the game they've got, you have to find things to unlock them.
Right.
So, but you do start off with a fair number, and there's a lot, and they are all pretty awesome.
Metal.
So, like, even just like the best thing about this game is getting in your car and flicking to a song you like, and then just driving around.
Yeah.
And like doing jumps and stuff. That's pretty cool.
That sounds fun. I wish the game was pretty much that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can just do that, but you have to get to that point in the first place.
So yeah.
But you get there fairly quickly.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, the other thing that told me back, of course, is it's a 360 game, and I don't get to play my 360 very often, and I was when I played the demo. I played the demo with my oldest kid, and we chose the non-swear word.
I can imagine that would probably be a little bit crap.
But even the non-swear word thing, it was pretty obvious that we're swearing. Yes, there are lots of swear words, even though it's bleeped out. So it's hard to play that game in the family room with all the kids floating around. So I don't know.
What you need is for the 360 to, you know, I'm doing the air quotes sign here, to break, and then you want to be fixing it, air quotes again, in your man cave. But you have to connect up to the monitor to be able to do that, to be able to test it out
for 40 hours.
Daddy, what's all that heavy metal going on? I've never heard this song before.
Well, Daddy bought a new album on iTunes. Hush up, I'm testing out that. Oh man. So, you know, are you gonna keep playing it? I mean, has it got to the point where you're?
I'm certainly going to play on. Okay. Yeah, I've just been quite busy the last couple of days.
Oh.
Like family stuff, like helping people and stuff.
Well, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, you know, next time we chat about, you know, going onward and what, you know, if it gets better or if it gets worse or stays the same level of annoyance on the gameplay elements, and if there's any more awesome factor in there.
I think it depends mostly on how much I have to force myself through the RTS, like the kind of the battles.
Right.
Yeah. That's all I have. That's all the games I've played this week.
Okay.
What we'll do, have a quick break here.
Okay.
Let the people listen to some music. Maybe try and write some heavy rock or metal for the weekend.
That'd be awesome.
And when we come back, we'll be on to our topic of the week. So welcome back. Hope you enjoyed the music there, music break. So the topic this week is something a bit different, a bit lighter than what it was last week. And basically, it's the gaming industry releasing too many good games. I've written about this kind of thing before, but this was inspired by a Kotaku article that I'll link to a while back, and what the kind of point the writer was making was that the industry is flooding the market with games, and that the market can't support them. You know, there's too many games, we can't afford to buy them all, and so they're all flopping, or most of them are flopping. I don't know where you stand on this. My kind of it's kind of strange for me, because on the one hand, from the article, I want to say I'd argue no, there aren't too many games. You know, I mean, since when has releasing good games been seen as a bad thing? You know, you know, how many times do you walk into a bookshop and think, man, I hate there's so many books. You know, I wish authors would stop writing so I can catch up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't ever think that, do you?
No.
And it's good to have that kind of variation. You know, not every game will you know, be directed at every, you know, consumer out there.
Right.
But at the same time, I wrote a couple of articles about one on the blog, actually, about the Wii and how it would be a better platform if publishers started releasing fewer but better games. Because what happened with the Wii was, well, in my opinion anyway, that there was a bit of, it became really successful, and then all the publishers went, okay, shit, why are we not on this platform? And so they all jumped on, and they all threw crap at the wall, basically, and let it, whatever stuck, they released. But maybe that's a different argument. Maybe
I think it's a different argument. I did my homework this week, and I read the article that you linked to, and this guy's full of shit. this is such a ridiculous thing to state. So, what other entertainment industry do people feel compelled to get every last piece of stuff that comes out?
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. This is like a movie file trying to watch every stinking movie that comes out every stinking week, or a bibliophile reading every single stinking book that comes out every single stinking week. Ridiculous. Ridiculous, ridiculous, ridiculous. Right?
Yeah.
We want to release less good stuff? I would say there's not... You know, games are getting better and better and better, but I would posit that they're not that good still in the main.
Yeah, no, they're still very childish in certain aspects.
And so...
Well, anti-mature, I should say.
They're, you know... And so saying that we want less good games to come out, that's... God!
Does it make your head hurt?
That's the dopiest damn thing I've ever heard of in my life. Yes. No, it is.
As I said, I can't see, the point is, I mean, what I do kind of agree, that I don't think, publishers are wasting so much money making all, doing all these projects, and really the gaming, the player base isn't large enough to support all these games coming out. And so ultimately it could actually negatively impact the gaming industry, because there's more losses and then more layoffs, and you know, the cycle kind of feedbacks on itself.
I'm sorry. You're not gonna do this.
But I mean, I actually do agree with you. I'm just
that doesn't give me any sense, right?
I can kind of see that point.
If too many people are making too many games and there are not enough people to buy them, then that, again, like I said in our last podcast, I believe in capitalism. Capitalism takes care of that, right? Because these people,
that will take care of that.
I don't like it when people lose jobs. I don't like it when companies go bankrupt. And, you know, good ones go bankrupt along with bad ones, right?
Mm.
In this sort of Darwinian natural selection sort of ecosystem that this is. But you know, if too many people put out too many games, people are going to go out of business, and people are going to figure out how to do it a little bit better and a little bit more efficiently and a little bit more customer friendly, hopefully. And so what we'll see is 10 years from now, games will be even, you know, 100% better than they are, you know, 1,000% better than they are now. If you think about what games were like 10 years ago, right? And I'm a guy who lives in nostalgia land, right? I'm a guy who, who, you know, still thinks it's 1997, but games, the average game is so much better now. And the situation and the platforms are so much better now than they were 10 years ago. That God, it's just I just can't even imagine what things will be like in 10 years from now.
Eventually they'll reach like a kind of a level, you know, a kind of a stagnation point, like cinema has, really.
Yeah.
Because you know they build the industry, and then there's courses where people go on, and the kind of accepted theories about how to put a game and a story together and stuff like that, they all come together, and they all, I mean, we're not quite there yet, but we're getting there, you know what I mean, as you point out.
Yeah.
But at some point we'll reach like a zenith where
but things do continue to evolve, right? I mean, if you look at movies from the 80s versus movies now, it suggests that,
but I think like it's partly technology and partly preference, isn't it? Like they have like, I mean, how many movies after The Matrix went around with that, you know, that slow motion wraparound camera thing shot? Yeah.
But
like kind of like a
fact. Well, that's a gimmick though that was used, and you know, bad movies used it badly and
good movies use it well.
Good movies use it well, because it's not about the effect, it's about how it's used to tell the story, right?
Yes.
And so you know, there are people out there that are continuing to challenge the medium in movies. I'm talking about movies. And so you continue to get better and better movies. Now, there's a lot of crappy movies. I don't watch, I don't go to the movie theater very often, because most of it is garbage, in my opinion. But, you know, even though the movie theaters and movie studios, the market has substantially and fundamentally changed how they do business in the past 20 years, right? And we're talking about VHS and DVDs and Blu-rays, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They still make a shit ton of money, right? And
they make enough to survive.
In the way that they survive. So I think, to bring this back into games, I think, you know, games are in the same way, in a lot of ways, like as you pointed out, it's very early on. This medium is still in its infancy. At some point, we're going to figure out the platform. You know, when we don't have to change platforms every 5 years and relearn all the tricks again, right?
Yeah.
Then we can start to move on from shiny whiz bang graphic stuff, which I like. I almost call it nonsense, but it's not. I enjoy the graphics just like everybody else.
No, I do. I like graphics,
but we can move on from just that into, you know, immersive storytelling and meaning and emotional content and things that gaming generally lacks, doesn't do a very good job of, right? So,
Just like kind of like a tangent to what you were saying just then. Like, I mean, do you know any like big audiophiles or cinemaphiles?
No, not really. I mean,
I'm just wondering, because like, like you're saying about movies, like most of it's crap.
Yeah.
Like I would also agree that most of gaming is crap as well. You know what I mean? Most games released.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, if you listen to a weekly release list of all the stuff that gets released, it makes you weep. How bad it is.
But the thing that surprises me is how many games I do not have time to play. You know what I mean? But I can count, you know, there are many films I think, you know, they're interesting. I wouldn't mind seeing them in the cinema, but it hasn't wrecked my life that I haven't watched them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've missed the window they've been on the cinema. But, you know, with a game, I'm like, if I've missed it, I'm like, oh, I need to go and find that game before it's run out of prints.
Yeah, but on the other hand, do you really need? I think it comes down from two things, right? One is you come from an older time where it was possible, and in some stages desirable to have all of the top, you know, top shelf, whatever that definition of top shelf is to you, all the top shelf games. Right, yeah. And it was possible to get them, and it's possible to play them, even though you might have a bit of a backlog on some things. And now it's not. But I think the thing is so what? Do you really need to play everything?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't try and play everything, but the games I want to play. You know what I mean? It's like the films I want to go and see. I will go and see them. Like I went and saw Avatar the other week. Right. It was okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything special in the end, but. Right. I mean, I'm just wondering, like, whether audio files and cinema files are the same. Like, I'm just happen to be like a gaming file, what you call them. You know, I make lists of games I want, even on consoles and for PCs that I do not own.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
I mean, the wish lists. I don't always act on them. I don't always buy the games that are on the list, but you know, to help me keep track of what's going on.
Well, and we're kind of. The pejorative we, right? We are different, right? This is our, in a good way. Well, okay. This is our hobby, right?
Yeah.
And so just like, you know, model training, and I have a friend who does model training. He's into model, into it.
Wow.
And so just like he, all of his spare time is spent messing with his model train, and he goes to the train store, and he's online all the time, and he will go to estate sales on the off chance that there's a model train something knick-knack there, and he's hardcore about it. He knows everything about everything to do with model trains. There's techniques and artistic stuff and blah, blah, blah. But
wow,
like he, I have a little bit of perspective on myself. I'm like that, right? I listen to, you know, four or five gaming podcasts. I'm on a gaming podcast. I spend an unhealthy amount of time on a gaming internet forum thingy. I read an unhealthy number of gaming-oriented blogs. I play an unhealthy number of games. And so, this is our hobby. This is what we do with our spare time. This is how we have fun.
Yeah.
I think it's okay if that's your hobby to make lists of games that you will never act on and play. But I think to say that there's too many good games is just Jesus.
Rubbish.
Jesus, come on now.
I know.
It's like saying there's too many good. I'm a bit of a bibliophile, right? I used to be more obsessive about it, and I've kind of mellowed out as time has gone on, but. I have a list of books that I want. There's running about 800 books.
800?
Yeah. And I carry it around in my wallet, just in case I happen to be at a bookstore. And
how'd you fit 800 books in your wallet? I mean, titles?
It's a big piece of paper, and I use a like 4-point font. To get them all.
Oh, sorry. It's not like you haven't written this out.
I'm high tech, okay. Baby. This is all in Word. And,
I was expecting it on like a PDA or something else.
I have a list of my top 100 that I have on my iPhone.
Okay.
So, but I have the master list with me in my wallet just in case. And so, yeah, if I'm at a bookstore and nothing new seems to be calling me, I will go work on that list because I like books. And like I say, I've gotten less obsessive about it over time, but yeah, I've got a large book collection. I know a bit about books and that sort of thing. But I don't need to read everything, right? I don't even get to read all of the books that I want to read, that I like to read, right? Because I'm too busy doing game nonsense, I guess. But
damn those games! I wish they'd release fewer games so I could read more books.
That's exactly right. So yeah, we need less good games so I could read more good books. But so I guess the point is that I don't bemoan the fact that there are a lot of good books out there that I will never ever get around to reading, right? I will never ever get around to reading my list. But that's okay. It's kind of cool that I get to read some of them and I enjoy them a lot. And it's the same thing with games. Let's take a really great example of a recently released game that I will probably never play through that is too bad, but oh well. Batman Arkham Asylum, right? I've got the disc.
You have the disc.
I've got the game. Yeah, I've got the game sitting in my living room. I've got the platform, right? Xbox 360.
You know what you need to do?
Yeah.
Get those kids off to college.
By then there'll be other stuff, right? There'll be the Xbox 720 and the whatever, right? So I will probably, I played like 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes of it. I've watched my son play a little bit of it. I'll never finish. I'm not going to go through that entire game.
Oh.
Which, yeah. Kind of too bad.
I mean, if you didn't have it, that's one thing, but you got it sitting there calling you. It's like a siren song. Yeah. It's like, come to me.
Well, it doesn't really call. It doesn't have that sweet of a voice. I mean, I just, like I say, you just don't have to play everything. You don't have to. We're not. For some reason, it's become nice to be a completionist society, and I think that's unhealthy in a lot of ways, right? Because you don't feel. One of the things I like about this podcast, Jim, is the fact that you will put up with me talking about Left 4 Dead 2 for 15 minutes, a game that's been out for it's only been out for 8 months, and you'll listen to me rattle on for 10 minutes about Interstate 76, a game that's been out for 12 years and doesn't even freaking work that good anymore. Right? And so,
it's interesting.
I think the thing is that a lot of people get caught up in, I got to play stuff new all the time. I got to play new stuff all the time. The new. It's like, are you really having fun cycling through games? You really get to let that stuff sink in when it's like, okay, I'm done with Heavy Rain, now it's on to Mass Effect 2.
And you actually very cleverly segued into what I was going to, the next point I was going to bring up. Like, I've noticed.
I'm clever that way.
I know. And even though I haven't told you what I was going to say, it's like, you're reading my mind. Games on the console, I will play through once, because I don't play multiplayer on the console. Right. I'll play through once, and then I won't discard them, but they'll sit there on my shelf. Or I'll play through a little bit, get frustrated, and stop playing it. On the PC, I'll reinstall them, go back and play them again and again and again. And I don't know whether that's a mentality that's kind of echoing from the kind of achievement kind of side of the world that's kind of started its life on consoles, is kind of gradually making its way over to PC games. I do have PC games that I haven't played more than once, but a lot of my PC games are played, two or three times.
I don't know, because I think I come at things a little bit differently. Because I'll pick up a PC game and I won't. There's a lot of games I don't finish. There's a lot of games I don't really even start.
Yeah.
I still have an embarrassing number of games that are still in the shrink wrap for the PC, sitting around in my basement somewhere. That's sad when you buy a game and don't have a chance to actually take it out of the shrink wrap and read the manual even.
Yeah, but you know that in 10 years' time, 15 years' time, those bad boys are going to be on eBay for £200 each.
Oh, well, maybe. Maybe that's how the kids go to college, is a semi-unopened collection of, whatever. I can't even remember what they are. But
that's what you should do. Like, just justify it. Justify it. Justify the purchases to your wife.
I'm just saving these away. They're going to be worth something someday. Yeah. but so, you know, and not really being a console gamer, we have some games, and mostly it's the kids who get it. But I guess I've always been, if I'm not having fun with something, I'll just, who cares? I'll move on to the next thing, right? So it's odd because, and maybe this is a subject for a different podcast, but I will power through a book that I'm not enjoying.
That is interesting.
Because a lot of times books,
is it like the informational side of it? It's like you feel like you're learning something from a different perspective, whereas games are more recreational.
It's not just that. It's more a lot of really good books they have crappy sections, just like a lot of games do, right? And so
it's like the escort mission.
Right. It's like, yes, this section is the escort mission of this book. And so I'll power through that to get to the good stuff, right? Whereas in a game, better be pretty good, right? Or if it's bad, it better be short-lived and then back to the good stuff. And I guess this is kind of offshoot of too many good games, right? Because there's something else to play that...
Yeah.
Because you don't really learn many things from games, right? And so... and so I can go play another game as easily... to me, playing games is a lot like watching TV, right? If I don't like what's on, I can always flip the channel to something else. And eventually something will strike my fancy and I will I'll waste 30 minutes of my life watching some stupid TV show about, you know...
A guy training dogs.
Or pyramids or whatever, right? So, games are the same way, right? If it's not entertaining, guess what? There's a lot of other things I could be doing with my time.
Yeah. And that's quite scary, actually, because I stopped pretty much watching TV a while ago.
Yeah.
Because I got to the point where even when I switch channels, there's still nothing I want to watch. There's nothing that interests me. And that I hope and pray that never happens to gaming, because I'm left with nothing then.
Well, maybe we'll have to learn how to read again. But
what to read? I read already.
So the good thing about games, right, the very positive thing about games, and why I'm always... very hopeful about the future of games, is as long as one person has a PC and a compiler, there will be a game that you can play that doesn't have DRM nonsense or crappy system requirements or always got to be phonome any of that. There's always going to be a game that you can play. So I'm always very positive about the future of gaming in general, even though. You know, the closed garden syndrome of all the consoles is a little bit dismaying to me personally, but I will always have something to play. And I guess the other thing is I don't demand exceptional graphical fidelity or high production values for the games that I like that are enjoyable.
No, as long as they're durable.
As long as they're endurable and they fit and they work and the game is fun to play, right? That indefinable concept. I'm good to go. I can play Rogue.
Do you have any guilty secrets, like any game you'll go and play? Well, specifically about gaming.
Oh, yeah.
No, I was thinking, like are there any, like, because for me, there's one game in particular I keep on going back to. Sins of a Solar Empire?
Oh, yeah.
But not that game, but before that, there's a game which kind of led me into playing that game. It's called Star Baron. And Star Baron.
Baron. Never heard of it.
Yeah, and it's a flash game. It's it's not that well known.
Right.
It's made by one guy, I think. And I think version 2 or whatever is the best one to play. There's a couple of versions floating out there. And it's a very simple game. It's like Galcon.
Okay. Yeah.
But not quite. A little bit different. You know, but you can control. That you can turn the planets into mine planets or into laser planets or into defensive planets and stuff like that, and I've wasted I play that game countless hours whilst listening to a podcast.
Oh,
I don't know whether, if you have any, but I can't play because I can't listen to a podcast and listen to play most
games.
Yeah,
I can't either. I can't either.
And I can't work while I'm listening to a podcast because I'll stop working.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're listening. Either you're not listening to the podcast or you're not working. Right.
Yeah. So it's either background noise, which makes it worthless, or.
I don't have anything like that. Because I have a long commute every day, so yeah. I get my podcasting time in on the drive into work. But I do have a few guilty pleasures. Bejeweled 2, brother.
Oh no!
Oh yes!
No!
If I have 15 minutes,
I thought I knew you.
Oh, you didn't. Oh, you only thought you knew me. If I have 15 minutes to kill, and I'm not currently in the middle of a book or something. Bejeweled, man. I'll pop that puppy up and play the, what's the time challenge mode? I think it's what's called. And, I love that game. That's an awesome game.
I suppose at least it wasn't Luxor. Could have been worse. Could have been Snake.
But yeah, that's one that, I view that as kind of a guilty pleasure because, yeah, like you said, your response to when I told you that,
I don't know. I was. To be fair, I was acting up a little bit.
Well,
but it does have kind of, you know.
No, it's,
oh my god, grandmas play that game.
Yes, absolutely, and there's a reason why, because it's fun. And it's easy to get into, and it's you don't have to think, and it's just a little. It's a time waster. It's like the definition of time waster. Bejeweled 2. There's a.
It's like getting a paper and then flicking to the back and reading the comics.
Exactly.
For like 5 minutes.
Exactly. Yes. You're not doing anything useful. You're not learning anything. You're just wasting. Just enjoy. That's not a waste of time, right? Enjoying yourself is not a waste of time.
Yeah, it's not a waste of time.
But but you're not doing anything useful for the universe in that 15 minutes either. You're just having a little fun to have a little downtime.
Yeah.
Which we all need at times. So yeah. So that's my thing. I will. You know, like we're. If we're going to go out to eat with the kids and you know the family and I'm done first, which hardly ever happens, but I'm waiting around for them to get it together. I will pop that puppy up. Peggle, same thing. I love Peggle. Everybody who hates Peggle, you're wrong. There's something wrong with you.
Can I just say I don't like Peggle?
You're dead inside, my friend.
I am. Maybe a unicorn. maybe a unicorn stabbed me when I was a child.
Perhaps you've been traumatized by a unicorn. In interesting ways, but that's just again. It's another. It's just. There's nothing going on there, but
I can't believe I Peggle. Peggle's not even really a game.
Peggle's a game, absolutely.
Peggle is as much of a game as dropping a coin. You know, when you go to like an arcade, and you can drop a coin and it hits those little pegs inside, and it drops down.
There's a little bit more to it than that.
Neither is Peggle. What you aim with a coin, you know, or the little dot goes.
If you play it enough to understand what the physics model is, you can do some pretty incredible shots. To get that last peg when you're down to one ball. And when you do that and the Ode to Joy plays, that's fucking awesome. Sorry, yeah. There's no feeling quite like that. Making a shot that's impossible because you ricocheted off of this and it ricocheted off of that, then it just barely tagged it, and then the Ode to Joy plays and you get that rainbow. It's brilliant.
So there's two things wrong with that picture. One, is it better than sex? Two.
Okay.
Sounds like it's a. Oh, he's joking. And two, Ode to Joy will forever be in my mind as part of the Civilization series.
Yeah. Well.
I can't hear it in another game. If I hear it in another game, I have to turn that game off and destroy the whatever medium.
It's on. And to totally screw up our sequencing, Civ 5.
Oh yeah.
Civ 5. Sorry, just said Civ that struck a. A note in my mind. Civ 5 coming out.
Yeah.
Fall.
It's kind of difficult to talk about that. There's not much information apart from controversially only one unit per hex and also hexes.
I'm interested to see how that plays out. But
yeah, me too.
But save your shekels, buy it. Just buy it. It's Civ 5.
Yeah. Well, things are. I mean, I bought Civ 4. Haven't played it. Well, I've played it with my friends. So I haven't played my copy, and I've ended up giving it to my friend who's a soldier who's off in African
That's
Americans.
Very nice. You're a good guy.
Because he's lost his copy. So yeah, I haven't really played Civ 4. I played Civ 2 a lot. Yeah.
Civ 2, brilliant. Civ 3, not as awesome, but still pretty good. Mm. Civ 4, brilliant, especially with the patches. Beyond the Sword, just or not patches, expansions. Brilliant.
Yes.
Brilliant. Totally awesome game.
I liked as well how they included modifications, like user mods,
yes,
as part of the game disc as well. That was quite a nice little
touch. Absolutely. And I actually got off my butt and wrote a mod, a map mod, because I didn't like their freshly generated maps. I wanted a procedurally generated plate tectonic based map generator to generate stuff that made sense. Yeah, I got it to work good enough for me, but not good enough to let everybody have.
You didn't share?
Of course not. I don't roll that way. So anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring a news up item.
No, that's fine. It's fine.
That's
right.
Magic word. So
but I think it's go on. Sorry.
No, I think.
Well, I was going to say if you haven't got anything else to say, we'll take a break.
More good games.
More we need good,
more good games. Less bad games.
It'd be nice if we could dictate that and then have it come true.
There we go. Well, buy good games. Don't buy crap games. There you.
Developers take notes.
Win.
Okay. We'll have another quick break here, and after we come back, our second topic. We've already about three, I think, but our second official topic, anyway.
Okay.
So welcome back. Not long left of the podcast now, I think. It's a quick topic here. I thought we'd get around to it eventually. We've been holding it in reserve for the last couple of podcasts. It's gaming regrets. Like, do we have any consoles that we, you know, or games we wish? I kind of tied into what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
The games we wish we had played or tried or had access to.
Yes.
Like, do you ever wish, speaking to you specifically, do you ever wish that you'd got into console gaming earlier?
Yes, I do. I wish, there's two consoles I wish I had gotten into. One is the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. Because I don't know anything about it. I've never played one, to my knowledge. But people speak with it with such reverence, and the games, the game library with such awe and they raps, you know, they speak about how many awesome games are on there and how many things that Nintendo has done since then have built upon what was done on the Super Nintendo. I wish I had had one at the time.
Depending on how you look at it, unfortunately, a lot of that kind of goodwill is nostalgic based.
A lot of that. Looking back is easier than looking ahead, right?
Yeah. So. I've been back and played some of the Sega Genesis or what is it, Mega Drive? Yeah, Mega Drive here.
Right.
And the SNES games, and yeah, they're still okay, but most of them are. Yeah, they don't hold up in today's gaming market.
Well, I'm not looking to go buy one and start trying to play it now because I know that it would not work. But I wish at the time, right?
You would have been blown away.
And the second one is I wish I had experienced the heyday of the PS2. Right? The library for that, even now, and it's been a long time since I've done this, but the last time I was in a GameStop, just the sheer volume of the library for that platform, and then the number of really good games people still talk about fondly. I really do wish that I had gotten into that platform back when it was going strong. I have a PS2. I bought it to play Guitar Hero. I have a couple other games that people have spoken highly of Final Fantasy X and XII, God of War, and Gran Turismo something. Three, maybe? Four?
I don't know, yeah.
And I play them some, but yeah, there's just so many games. It's coming at it now, even as somebody who doesn't mind the graphical fidelity not being quite what it is on other consoles, it's just hard to know where to go to get good games, right? And there's so many other things.
Yeah, you got no reference.
Yeah, I don't have a reference. Yeah, you can only read so much and discover what other people think.
Yeah. Especially these days as well, because there's no one writing about those games anymore.
So, but I do feel like I've missed out on a lot of good gaming by not having that that console.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, but yes, that is, so that's definitely a gaming regret. The other thing I'd like to bring up as far as regret goes, and I don't know how regretful I am of this. Sometimes I'm thankful for this. But I've never played an MMO, okay. And I kind of wish I had at least had some experience with those.
Because you said before you have a bit of a addictive personality sometimes.
Yeah, I can definitely have an addictive personality traits. So that's why I've stayed away from them.
Yeah, sensible.
Right, but I do wish that I had been able to play, you know, something from back in the day, maybe World of Warcraft when it first came out, or, you know, Ultima Online when it first came out. I remember when it first came out, that was a big deal. And
they are really like the prime examples of something where if you can't even go back to them.
Right, absolutely. Of course, there's no right. There's no going back to Ultima Online, right, the way it was.
No, I mean, you could, if you wanted to, you could at least go back and buy a SNES and buy the games.
Right.
And okay, you wouldn't be able to experience it from the point of, like, being as you were in 1992.
Right.
But, you know, you'd still be able to do it. But, yeah.
Most of the time I'm thankful that I haven't gotten into MMOs, but sometimes I am regretful that I haven't at least experienced, you know, some of that stuff and, you know, gotten a level, whatever, in World of Warcraft or, you know, one of those others, EverQuest or, you know, those sorts of games, right?
Yeah.
But... yeah, so again, regret a little bit. What about you? Okay. What about you, Jeremy?
Similar sort of thing. I never had an N64.
Okay.
And when I went to college, university, should say, one of my flatmates in first year, he had an N64. And there was so... I played Ocarina of Time for the first time. I played, I don't know, Lilac Wars. I can't remember what it was called. Mm-hmm. Star Fox on the N64, and yeah, I was so jealous, and I've never bought one, but yeah, I wish I'd had that and had the experience of playing those games, because I would have really enjoyed them. That's my main regret, really. And I think, I had a PS1, but I didn't get it until like the last year or so before the PS2 came out.
Right.
I don't really regret not getting that sooner. I was fine with that. But I think there was when I was what I really regret is selling my consoles when I was younger.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
because I sold my NES to get a SNES, so I used to get Game Gear, and I sold the Game Gear to get a SNES.
Right.
And I wish I still had them and the games that I remember playing on them.
Right.
Because I kind of remember what they were like, but. There's one that was on the Game Gear, and I think it's the right one. I've found it through the internet. It's not like downloaded it or anything. It's just like, you know, looking at which game it was. Wow. It doesn't look quite as I remember it.
They seldom do.
Yeah, well, no, but like even like the kind of the way, I'm not convinced it's the right one. But I wish I just had those things. But at the same time, I got a SNES and a Mega Drive back from my mum's. And it'd been in the closet, and the closet had gone mouldy, neither of them work anymore.
Oh man!
Well, maybe the games do, but I'm not going to go out and spend, you know, 30, 40 quid on a SNES or a Mega Drive.
Right.
So I mean, I do have, you know, luckily publishers have deigned to give us compilations, haven't they? So like on the 360 and the PS3, there's like the Mega Drive compilation or the Genesis compilation.
Right.
That's pretty cool, actually. It's just a shame the Mega Drive, the the 360 pad isn't that great for playing older games.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, at least I can play them a little bit. You know, I've got Sonic 1, 2, and 3 and stuff, and Sonic and Knuckles, and they're pretty cool. But yeah, I need something like that on the SNES. Well, I know you can get them on the Wii, but I haven't got a Wii.
Okay. Yeah.
But I don't regret not having a Wii.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to play on the Wii.
No. So. I don't have any kids, so I mean, I think if I had a couple of kids, it'd be great to play some cool titles with them.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun playing the Wii with the kids, but I would not have gotten one for myself.
No.
Super Smash Brothers Brawl is pretty awesome with my youngest kid, even though I don't like very many of the characters or the fighting in it, but he enjoys it, and he can kick my butt about half the time, and so it's great. We're evenly matched.
Yeah. I used to play that on the N64 with my mates. Ah. I always played Pikachu because I could, you know how Kirby can kind of float back up onto the stage? So if you get kicked off, you can kind of come back. Yep. Well, Pikachu has this cool thing where you could like zap yourself back onto the stage as well.
Oh, okay.
And if you did it properly, you could move twice rather than just normal once. Uh-huh. So it looked quite fun. I had fun frustrating other people.
That's what the game's about. It's
like you think, those type of games, definitely.
Well,
yeah, so I think that's everything, really. So I think possibly we should say goodnight and goodbye.
That's everything. So, wrapped up in a ball, tied up with a bow.
Hope you enjoyed the show, everyone. And we'll see you again possibly in another 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I appreciate talking with you, Jim, as always.
No, it's been a pleasure.
And, one thing I want to mention. The name of the podcast, The Easy Button, was originally suggested by our good friend, one Quentin Stone.
Oh, Quentin Stone, yeah. And, has he paid you to say this?
And so he has paid me. I hope the check doesn't bounce there, Quentin. So I wanted to bring that out, that we have a listener who helped us out early on, and we appreciate all of our listeners. We love you all.
We do. Oh, and one last, news for the podcast. What I'll probably end up doing is deleting the feed and then re-putting it up because for some reason it's stuck being Hole in My Head rather than Easy Button, which is a bit annoying. Okay. So while we've only got three listeners on the, three subscribers, I should say, then I'll probably do that.
That would probably be a good time.
Sometime this week.
Don't break a lot of people's stuff.
All right, then. Good night and goodbye, and have a good weekend.
Good night, everybody.